What is going on, Jet fans? Matt O'Leary back with another episode of Just Jets, coming to you on the channel and in podcast form every single Wednesday for, I guess, 214 straight weeks. We are doing the damn thing over here. I appreciate you guys following along with me, and we are back for another episode. It's going to be a fun one. I have some thoughts on what Woody Johnson, Joe Douglas, and Robert Saleh said at the NFL owners' meetings. We'll talk about the New York Jets looking at Michael Pratt. He was throwing at the Tulane Pro Day yesterday, and the Jets were there. Talk about that. And, of course, your voicemails. Want to plug, though, our Talking Jets NFL Draft Party. So if you don't know, we've talked about it, but you probably should know. But in case you don't, or if you're on the fence about getting tickets, there are 16 days left for you to purchase tickets to this event. We got to let the venue know, the main event on Long Island, how many crazy Jet fans are coming. So it's important that we set an end date on this thing so that we can then let them know in advance and get everyone settled in. So what you get with your ticket is an open bar for the length of the first round. You also get food. We're having tons of different appetizers and like all like chicken parm, like that kind of food. Food at main event's actually very good. I've been there a few times. And in addition, there's going to be some raffles. We're raffling off tickets to AFC East rivalry game against either dealer's choice. So whoever wins gets to choose Dolphins or Patriots. And then the second game we're raffling off is against one of the NFC West opponents. I believe the Rams, I have it written down. The Rams and the Seahawks are the two home games. So one of those two games as well. Merch, jersey, whole lot of fun. So make sure to come on down, check it out, get your tickets at talkingjets.com. All right, let's hop into this episode now. Again, excited to hop into this one as we got some news this week. And it started off a little bit more on the quiet side, I guess I would say, with not a whole lot going on free agency-wise. That slowed down. What a fun push that was for a while. But it's kind of hitting that lull before the draft comes back, and then it's going to go up, 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 and get exciting again. But Woody Johnson, Joe Douglas, and Robert Saleh all spoke on Monday at the NFL owners meeting. And I had what I wanted to do. I did a full video on breaking down Robert Saleh's press conference yesterday. I did a video more with Joe Douglas with a couple things he said that stood out to me. But in the pod episode, figured I'd kind of go a little bit more monologue-y on just the overall theme from all three of these guys. And we'll start with Woody Johnson. I guess we'll go owner and work our way down the pecking order. I've ranted and raved about Woody Johnson the last few times that I've brought him up. I've had to go in a little bit, and it's just a little bit, in my opinion, at least frustrating how he lacks this self-awareness in a way. And it's really twofold with two of his comments that were made on Monday. We'll start with him saying that the Jets won't cut Zach Wilson. Now, I'm not going to sit here in fear that Woody Johnson is now saying that Zach Wilson's 100% on the 2024 roster. You got to take these things with a little bit of a grain of salt, but it's just so funny, and it feels like damage control. After a few weeks ago, 6 weeks ago at the Super Bowl, at the NFL Honors, he's out there talking about how the Jets didn't have a backup quarterback on the roster in 2023. 6 weeks later, he's going, "Someone please take my asset. Actually, he's a valuable piece. We're not going to just cut him." So it's you know, like he's trying to tip the scales the other way. And I get it. I'm not going to say that there should be any sense of fear that the Jets are going to bring Zach Wilson back in 2024. But it's just, again, that was something that was a little bit more on the funny side because they are clearly trying to move off of him at this point. It seems like it would make the most sense to get a fresh start for him and for the New York Jets to go with a different young quarterback to sit behind the two guys, the two vets that they have in Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor. And if that's something that you're concerned about, that, oh my God, like they're actually going to bring this guy back for another year, I wouldn't be at that point yet. You know, it's still early. It's March 27th. By the time you're listening to this, something could come up on the draft. weekend, you know, on day three. We'll be live on Sunday talking about, or Saturday rather, you know, the whatever fifth or sixth round prospects on the board. And then we'll get the trade notification come up that the Jets are trading, you know, pick 256 and Zach Wilson for, I don't know, a late sixth, early seventh round pick. You jump up 30 spots in the draft and you attach Zach Wilson with it, maybe eat some money or something like that. That wouldn't surprise me at all. The second part that I wanted to get into is another area that really frustrates me about the Jets, and in particular Woody Johnson, because he's the owner, right? It starts with him. The Jets raised ticket prices for season ticket holders this past year, and he was asked about it and essentially said the cost of doing business is going up and we're raising our ticket prices because of it. And to me, I just don't see a fan base that is maybe treated worse than Jets season ticket holders. And I am not a Jets season ticket holder, although I've had someone from the Jets reach out to me now multiple times trying to get me to buy season tickets, and it took every ounce of me not to send a message back, not attacking the salesperson. They're just doing their job. I get where they're coming from. They're doing their job, but my frustration comes from higher up. And you know, you see these teams who are season ticket holders, how they treat their season ticket holders with, you know, these really extensive packages for, like, you know, their tickets come in like this nice presenting thing. You get not like a prize, feels like the wrong word, but almost like you get some memorabilia or something like that. For instance, the Mets, when Steve Cohen took over, they started to send out more personalized things to season ticket holders. And the Jets get a yearbook and a typed up letter from Woody Johnson, the season ticket holders. And oh yeah, by the way, their prices skyrocket year over year, as the Jets currently have the longest active playoff drought in all the four major sports here in North America. So forgive me if I'm not going to take Woody Johnson's side on this one and just kind of shrug it off to the cost of doing business is going up, so we got to raise our ticket prices. That is just baloney to me. Sorry, it is. I don't think that's the right thing to do to these fans who, you know, the Jet fans show out no matter what, even if the team stinks, if they're good, whatever. It's a very passionate group, clearly, as I am able to come on here and talk to you guys every single day, 365 days a year, about this football team that plays, 6 months out of the year, plays one game a week, and hasn't made the playoffs in 13 years. There's still a passionate enough fan base in this world where I can have and be blessed with this platform to come and talk about this team every single day and make it a big part of my career and what I do every day for work, technically. It's for that I am blessed about, because I will always owe a large part of my career life to Jet fans. But the organization, specifically Woody Johnson, he drives me nuts anytime he opens his mouth. I feel like he only makes it worse. I would rather Woody Johnson just shell out the money, hire football people to do football things, and let it be. There's no reason he should be in exit meetings with players. Does he really need to be in the draft room as well, sitting there with his white, you know, his white collared shirt and his Jets hat that's folded up like a pretzel, you know, all the way down low, sleeves rolled up and, you know, sweating through his white shirt. And like, I got to get on the call so I could talk to Will McDonald and tell him we're excited for him to come in here. Like, it's a bit much. Woody really, it's obvious that Woody cares about being liked, and I get it. You know, he has a lot of money. He owns a team, and sure, theoretically, yeah, it's his right to run the team however he wants to run the team. But I think he's going about it the wrong way. He's only doing half the job, because he provides the money, and credit to him. You know, the Jets are for the most part willing to spend, but meddling and getting involved is something that he does a very, very poor job at. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to not going to take too kindly to the it's the cost of doing business comments on the raising of season ticket prices for a team that's missed the playoffs for 14, 13 years. It's unreal. Absolutely unreal. For Joe Douglas, I think he's trying to set up a little bit of a smoke screen. Rich Cimini asked him about Brock Bowers, even though he wouldn't come out and say Brock Bowers' name. He talked about, oh, well, you know, there's a tight end who's maybe going to go in the top 10. Would you take a tight end in the top 10? And we got a nothing answer from Joe Douglas, which, to Joe's credit, it's annoying as someone who's looking to get, you know, information and sound bites and stuff from these things. But Joe Douglas gives you absolutely nothing. And I think he's trying to set up a smokescreen where, you know, you have no idea what the Jets are going to do, which is going into this draft. I think what I like about how Joe Douglas set himself up is there are multiple routes for the Jets to go in the draft. And I've talked through them before. Like, you could stay put at 10. You could take Brock Bowers. You could take a wide receiver that you like. You could take an offensive lineman. You could trade back and either target offensive line, wide receiver, something on the offensive side of the ball. There are many, many things that Douglas can do. And I like that he's setting it up where it's not obvious the direction it's not perceived obvious the direction that they're going to go. Because you have to remember, last year everyone thought, oh my gosh, the Jets are definitely going offensive line. And, you know, the Steelers jump in front of them, take Broderick Jones. The Jets take Will McDonald. But if you watch back the videos, Joe Douglas calls out and says, Pittsburgh's going to jump up. They're going to take Broderick Jones. And their board at the time was Will McDonald 1, Michael Mayer 2, Broderick Jones 3. I'm not saying that's what my board would be. I would have taken the offensive lineman last year. And then once they didn't, I would have probably pivoted to a wide receiver. They take Will McDonald. The rest is history. But they've shown that they are interested in taking weapon in the first round. So you can't rule that out. You absolutely cannot rule out the idea of the New York Jets taking a Brock Bowers. And to be honest with you, I don't like the you can't take a tight end because and then throw like Anthony Becht at you or Kyle Brady. Like, Anthony Becht and Kyle Brady are close to the same player that Brock Bowers is. Yes, technically both tight ends, but different stylistic tight ends. Brock Bowers is a pass-catching weapon that can line up as an inline tight end like those guys or line up as a big slot out wide at receiver in the backfield. I think what bothers me more about the discourse on the Jets draft pick is not the idea that the Jets could take a Brock Bowers and talk positional value or anything like that, but just the vitriol that gets thrown around from the Bauer boys or the O-line ogres or the wacky wideouts or whatever stance you're on. Like, I wish it didn't have to be, I'm going to plant my flag on, we'll say, Bowers, for instance, and if the Jets take anyone but Brock Bowers, I'm going to talk about how much of a massive mistake it is and put down every other scenario the Jets can do, put down every other prospect. Like, that's the absolute, I'll use the word, it's insufferable. It is absolutely insufferable, the infighting that is going on right now. Why can't we just talk through how, hey, I can see the case for taking a Brock Bowers because you're adding another weapon or a wide receiver because you look at, it's Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams coming off an injury, and then some question marks in there. Like, you can absolutely make a strong case that they should take an offensive weapon. At the same time, to be like, I don't get why anyone could think that they should draft an offensive lineman is also an insane statement to say. When you look at the Jets bringing in two tackles who missed time last year, Morgan Moses played 14 games, but played through an injury, had surgery. Elijah Vera Tucker has gotten hurt and missed significant time each of the last 2 years. And Tyron Smith hasn't played a full season in 9 seasons. So you can make a case that they should go offensive line in the first round. I'm not saying that's definitely what they're going to do and that it's a mistake if they take a weapon, because as I just said, that's not the case. You can make a strong argument for them to take a weapon, but the thought that one is like so right and the other side is just so wrong, is so stupid. It's so frustrating. Like, I just wish people would be a little bit more open-minded to the ideas and possibilities that are getting tossed out there at what the Jets can do, and appreciate, by the way, the options that the Jets have, and that they are not going to be pigeonholed into just doing one thing. As for Robert Saleh, last thing on Robert Saleh before we get into the Jets scouting Michael Pratt, he would not put out a playoff mandate on himself, but then eventually got to saying that winning cures all, which is the truth, and that it's fair to expect wins in you know, fourth season as a head coach. And I'm glad he eventually got there, and I'm not going to crush him for how he handles the press, because I do think some of it's a little unfair that he's the mouthpiece for the entire organization. Joe Douglas talks to the media a handful of times a year. In season, it's Robert Saleh talking to the media a handful of times a week. And granted, there are times where you're like, dude, like, come on. It's a little bit much. I fully agree. You're not going to get me to disagree with you there. But I think the hate that gets tossed his way at times is a little overblown in comparison to Joe Douglas, who, for the most part, gets a pass from this organization. I'm not saying that he deserves to be fired or anything like that, but I think Saleh and Douglas should be on just about even playing field going into their fourth season and sixth season. So it's not just winning cures all and that, you know, there's a playoff mandate for Robert Saleh. That also applies to Joe Douglas, who's been here for five seasons and is going into a sixth. And I get it. Like, there's circumstances with injuries and, you know, he had to tear it down and build it back up. Like, all those things are totally true with Joe and Robert, like, to some degree. But it is more than time for the winning to start to come. And there is zero excuse for next year. It doesn't matter who gets hurt. It doesn't matter, you know, the schedule you play, whatever, right? Like, figure it out. You have to be a playoff team in year six for Joe Douglas and year four for Robert Saleh. It's time. There are no more moral victories. Hey, we finished the year strong and we won seven games with a backup quarterback. Or, hey, we were a top five defense for the third year in a row and, you know, let down by the offense again. No excuses. You got to find a way to get it over the hump and get into the playoffs. Speaking of the offense, let's get into the New York Jets looking at Michael Pratt, the quarterback from Tulane. So he is a name that is going to be one that I think the Jets and Jets fans should look at, because the Jets, I don't think, are going to take, and I'd be surprised, that'd be a really big curveball if they did this, take a quarterback in the first round. But many have discussed taking a mid-round quarterback. And the most popular names, there's three, the most popular names are Michael Pratt out of Tulane, who they looked at yesterday, Jordan Travis out of Florida State, and you also have Spencer Rattler as well in the mix from South Carolina. And Spencer Rattler's interesting because he was once looked at as a premier prospect, had to transfer, and like there's some questions with him, but you can not deny that the talent is there. Jordan Travis played well, had the injury, unfortunately, but at times maybe a little inconsistent passing, but there's some intrigue there. And Michael Pratt is someone who I like, maybe doesn't get as much hype as either Travis or Spencer Rattler. But for Pratt, like, the reason or some traits that you might like is his running ability. So if something's not there, he's not afraid to tuck it and run. And, you know, the same could be said about Jordan Travis. But something I like about Pratt as well is how he maneuvers through the pocket and keeps his eyes downfield as the play is breaking down around him a little bit. He's not afraid to move around. He doesn't kind of just go into that shell and fold into a sack. He's willing to step up. He's willing to, you know, move around. Not like, unfortunately, remember when like we'd see the Zach Wilson bailout on the pocket and roll like way out to the left or way out to the right. He's not doing that. That's not what I mean by moving around the pocket. I'm talking about if his plays are breaking down, he's stepping up and over and, again, maneuvering the pocket. But a reason why he's probably going to be available late day two, early day three, and again, that's I put those three quarterbacks I listed off, the Pratt, Rattler, and Travis kind of all in that same tier, probably going somewhere between the third and fifth rounds for those guys, is he doesn't have the strongest of arms. That's arm strength is something that's going to get brought into question. And like, let's be honest, with all three of these quarterbacks, if they were perfect prospects, and no prospect is perfect to begin with, they'd be going significantly higher. You're talking about a mid-round pick dart throw. You just have to, and again, I sound like a broken record here, I apologize, but you just have to latch on to whatever traits you're looking for in a quarterback and hope it works. And who knows, for the Jets, maybe it's drafting Michael Pratt, and best case scenario, he sits for a couple of years and is able to start. But probably most likely scenario, sits, develops into a serviceable backup quarterback, maybe someone who can spot start, and then could help groom along that next quarterback when Tyrod's deal's over in 2 years, and Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, is probably gone after 2025. I think you get 2 years of Rodgers in 24 and 25, and you're probably drafting a quarterback in 2026, and then you have Michael Pratt, who's been in the system for 2 years and can function in this offense and has played a little bit in the preseason or maybe spot started a time or two and could function. That, I think, is the most realistic way of looking at it, and I'm good if that's what the Jets decide to do. And Pratt's one of those guys, again, that I think fits the bill of what the Jets would be looking for out of a mid-round quarterback. To the voicemails we'll go. First one is Ted calling in from New Jersey.
My name is Ted. I'm calling from New Jersey. And my question is there any chance, and what are the thoughts of keeping Zach Wilson as QB3 to see if he can develop into something? What do you think? Thank you. Bye.
I don't think it makes sense for a few reasons. One, you know, last year you could have sold ourselves on it because he had 2 years left under his contract, right? 23 and 24. The Jets are not picking up his fifth year option because it would be an insane amount of money in 2025. So this is his last year under contract before he becomes a free agent. So sitting and developing him for what is would be my question back, because he's not going to be on the team in 2025. They're not giving him another contract. He would hit the market and go somewhere else. You know, they signed Tyrod Taylor to a 2-year deal. Aaron Rodgers is signed to a 2-year deal. I'm sure with how Zach Wilson's, you know, how things have gone for Zach Wilson in his first 3 years, and then if he sat as an inactive QB3 for all of 2024, I don't think he's signing up. His agent's going to go, yeah, well, you want to re-sign with the Jets and go back there. I think he'd probably be looking for another, you know, scenario. Plus, like, why I would just be willing to move on is, like, again, I think it's better for both sides. For Zach Wilson to maybe salvage his career, I'm not very confident in that happening at this point. And for the Jets to just move on and kind of just get that dark cloud out. And it's unfortunate, right? Like, no one wanted Zach Wilson to bust. I was hoping that Zach Wilson was going to be the answer at quarterback. I liked him coming out of college. I thought it was a worthy top pick in the draft, but you know, sometimes these things don't work out. Look at the other quarterbacks outside of Trevor Lawrence who went in the first round. Mac Jones got traded. Justin Fields got traded. Trey Lance got traded. And now Zach Wilson's on the verge of getting traded or moved. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. And I don't think tripling down really on your bet with Zach is, I think, would be a little stubborn from Joe Douglas. I just think it's best for all to move on. Let's go to Jerry's kind of hard to hear, from New York, wants to talk about how the Dolphins are building their offense and how that impacts the Jets.
Hey, this is Jerry from New York, a Jets fan since birth, it feels like. I hope the Jets are realizing that the Miami Dolphins is building speed for their team. And I hope the Jets on defense have speed.
Yes. Ever since they traded for Tyreek Hill, they have Hill, they have Waddle. Their running backs are fast. They're potentially bringing in Odell. That's how the the Dolphins operate. They are a speed team. The Jets have speed at linebacker. They have, you know, Quincy Williams flying around on defense. That's what they like. They like those lighter linebackers who kind of fly around. At safety, I don't know if you're saying a ton of speed. I guess Tony Adams probably has more speed than Chuck Clark. Maybe they add more there, but how the Jets combat or are going to combat the Miami Dolphins is via the pass rush and cover ability. Because they can't utilize that speed if they're not getting open or if the pressure is getting home quickly. The Jets haven't fared well against the Dolphins the last few years because, well, unfortunately, the quarterback play has been a major, major issue with that. But I think they know that the Dolphins are built. The NFL is very, very aware that the Dolphins are built with speed. They haven't had the success in the playoffs yet because of it. And, you know, I think injuries are a big part of that each of the last couple of years. But they've had some questions on the offense. I would say there's some questions on the offensive line after, you know, losing some key pieces in free agency. So we'll see how they adjust and how they pivot. But yes, the Dolphins are going to be built on speed in 2024. PG from Long Island, he wants to talk some Robert Saleh.
Hello, Matt O'Leary. PG from Long Island here.
What's up, sir?
Two things. One, report from Rich Cimini that the Jets had a chance to sign Quentin Jefferson before he signs at the Browns, but they didn't return his phone call. Rich said it was from two sources within the Jets. I haven't heard much else about it. Don't know if it's true. If it is true, horrible. I mean, how does that happen? Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, it's a good fit for the Jets, and to let something like that just fall through the cracks. I mean, we're not playing with Monopoly money here. So that's disturbing. Second thing, Robert Saleh, the ball is in his court, okay? Hopefully he's not out Googling how do head coaches respond when the GM does a great job in the offseason. You know, he's got to step up. I love the hire when it happened. I think he's done a poor job. And let's see now, he has a, you know, good roster. If it stays relatively healthy, you know, we got to see these teams showing up to play, which we saw sometimes last year just didn't happen. And again, I could see a scenario where Joe Douglas, for the job he's done, and I haven't been, you know, big fan of his lately, but so far so good this year. He keeps his job and Saleh doesn't. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully Saleh steps up and has a good year. And then the third thing is Brock Bowers.
Okay. For
different opinions about him and, you know, his fit with the Jets. Joe Blewett at the X Factor evidently has a is down on him with his film review, but others like Len Norton have said that he is just be a perfect fit because of his versatility. Question is, if there's an offensive lineman, which we're going to need in the future, or a wide receiver, which we're going to need in the future, on the board, do we go with Brock Bowers? And I'd love to get your opinion on that. In any case, as always, go Jets.
Thank you so much, PG. I think there's a real chance that they can take Brock Bowers. They showed interest in Mayer last year. And, you know, I'm sure the Jets are or would be excited about the versatility that he would bring to the offense side. Now, you mentioned two kind of polar opposites of the spectrum there. In Glenn, who's more of the, you know, like leaning heavy that Bowers is definitely the right fit. And Joe Blewett, who is not convinced. That's not where he is. I guess I'm going to take middleman Matt's stance on it. I think that, you know, I think Joe's probably a little bit too low, at least in my opinion. And Joe does a lot of amazing work with film. I'm not discrediting his opinion in any sense. He's allowed to view guys however he sees fit. And I do agree with a lot, not all, but a lot of his opinions. I think he's a little too low on Bowers. And for Glenn, I think that it's probably like, look, you might have to be okay with them not taking Brock Bowers, that there are other routes that the Jets can go and for it to work out. And the point that I want to bring up in this PG is that I don't think that Joe Douglas can really make a wrong decision unless he's going like defensive line, Dallas Turner, Latu, Verse, you are a New York Jet at pick 10. Then we could be like, all right, the Jets have this up. If they draft Browers, am I going to say that the Jets messed up? I don't think so. That's not going to be my reaction on draft night. If they took an offensive lineman, am I going to say the Jets messed this up? No, because that guy's going to play at some point this year. I think you make a strong case for either way. I really do. Let's close out the show with Peter from up in the beautiful Hudson Valley.
Hey, Matt. It's Peter from up in the beautiful Hudson Valley calling in this week as free agency has slowed down to a crawl for the Jets after a visit last week by Jadeveon Clowney, hoping we still bring him on board and others to fill in at safety and running back. But now I've started to look forward, as you and others have, toward the draft. It's generally not been my type of thing to look at mock drafts or make mock drafts myself, but considering how well free agency has gone so far for the Jets, I thought it was time maybe to start looking into it. So I checked out a couple of free ones first, and they weren't too bad. But then I decided to try PFF and subscribe for at least a month between now and the draft to play around with it and see what happens, as you do on your Mondays, which I always enjoy.
Thank you.
And I've obviously been watching more of the content of Ryan and Dom C on Mondays when they talk about their prospects and stuff. And so here's what I come up with, at least after going through several iterations. The one surprising thing I found is that somehow Olufoshanu has been dropping on PFF's rankings.
Yeah.
So I created a mock where I traded with Seattle and went from 10 to 16.
Okay.
Picked up pick 81, and in round 4, pick 118, but then the Jets gave away round 3, pick 72. I forgot to see, of course, who Seattle drafted at pick 10. That was my fault, but I wanted to go forward with my mock. So at 16, we took Olufoshanu, so now we have a backup to Tyron Smith, who probably will wind up playing a little in his first year, and if Smith is not back for a second year, now we have his replacement. In round 3 was pick 81. We took Jerry Rice's son, Brendan.
Nice.
To give us another weapon. Round 4, pick 111, Cooper Beattie, guard, but also has some tackle flexibility. Pick 118, round 4, Malik Washington, favorite of the group. I would like to see him at the slot wide receiver position as well. Round 4, pick 134, Jordan Travis, so we can develop a quarterback, hopefully, with this team. Round 6, pick 185, we needed another defensive lineman under contract. Jordan Jefferson, big body out of LSU, will help fill that need. And the two picks at the end, safety out of Oregon State, Kitten Oladapo, someone that's a Dom C favorite that could help us out. And last pick, Cedric Johnson out of Mississippi, edge player, a little bit bigger body, someone more like JJ, that we can hopefully develop into a edge player role for this team in the future. So let me know your thoughts on that. And as always, go Jets.
Yeah, I really like this a lot, Peter. And now I spent most of the show talking about how the Jets have options and how they're all good. My favorite, with fully admitting that it takes two to tango and it might be easier said than done to trade down, but I do really like a trade down for this scenario, because then you can take, you know, a player in the first round, 5-6 spots down. Like you said, you traded with Seattle, that's 6 spots dropping down, still getting a really dang good player. Maybe get someone in the second round as well, if you slide back 6 spots, or an additional, you know, third round pick, however it slices out for you. The thought of moving back, getting a lineman and wide receiver in the top 50, let's say, for instance, I know Seattle doesn't have a second round pick, so that's maybe the bad example, but just saying, like, in general, that is what I like to do. But you kind of pivoted, because you still came away with Brendan Rice and Malik Washington. That's two different. That's adding two receivers in the mid rounds, and stylistically, two very different ones. Malik Washington, your small slot, speedy guy. Brendan Rice, outside receiver. He's a little bit bigger, good hands. So it still works, and I think it's a very, very good mock draft. It hits on all the key needs. You know, the late round dart throws, you kind of, especially in like the seventh round, you're just taking your favorite prospects. Like, I love, and like, I get it. Like, we're all about, you know, debating and stuff like that. But I love posting every mock draft Monday when I, you know, I post the picture or the graphic of the mock, and people want to argue about like 250, pick 256. I can't believe you took insert player or position here at pick 256. And you're like, dude, it's like the second to last pick in the draft. Like, close your eyes and throw a dart, basically, and hope that it hits. But moral of the story, I think you attack all the key positions. I like both Brendan Rice and Malik Washington as mid-round swings. Jordan Travis is one of the three names I listed for quarterbacks to watch. Whoever you like the most, whether it's Travis, Pratt, Rattler, in that spot where you got him, I think that's probably the most, Travis is the most likely one to be there of the three. So this overall solid mock. I think you attack a lot of needs, and I would be very happy if that's the draft that the Jets came away with. So thank you so much to everyone who checked in and called in. Thank you to everyone who tuned in and listened. Very much so appreciated. If you're on audio only, please make sure to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. On YouTube video form, please leave a like and a comment, share with a friend, subscribe if you're new. I'm Matt O'Leary, and I will catch you guys next time.